ballet that we call Rugby League.
He must feel pretty confident with that additional bulk he's put on. Now watch the defence, it'll be fairly violent, I would imagine.
And now the gladiators hobble, aren't he, with the left forearm. It was as nasty as we've seen for a long time.
A little bit out of character, he's a very clean player.
Manly slumped to eighth on the ladder.
It's just rubbing salt into the wound.
You can see the head clash there.
Oh, very nasty.
And the crowd love it. They've all taken their angry pills. That smashes him to ground. The one-handed pass back inside.
With a delicate kick.
He smacked their bottoms with a beautiful bit of football early. Thank you, Mrs. Robinson. Another little slanging match.
He's only 5 metres from the line.
And he's hurt on the burst.
He runs into a wall.
Certainly got some forearm in it for some damage done to him with a boot or a knee. But my heavens, he's really bleeding.
He's come out of it very much the worse for wear.
Bleeding like a stuck pig out there.
And the crowd's starting to go wild.
Intercepted.
Shows it. Goes outside. Depp steps again. Steps again. He gets it down. It is a try.
Yes, it's a try.
It's a sad, sad commentary on the mentality of some of the idiots that follow Australian sport.
Now, please welcome your muscle-bound maestro, Stephen Ferris and Chris Gayle, as they fire up.
Chris Gayle, good morning to you. I've only got two things to say to you. Thank Christ for the Titans. I'm feeling very good this week after St. George win. And nothing like a win to cleanse the soul. And mate, you're optimistic. And look to this glittering new season of ours in rugby league with a bit of hope in our eyes. How are you this morning?
Stephen, very well. I actually went out to Parramatta v. Titans last night.
Gee, that might have, you might have taken a couple of blows there.
Yeah, you might want to reinterpret how well your team is going.
Exactly.
Can I just put it that? I was there with 6,826 hardy souls, and my mate Peter Collar, who was on the show earlier this year, he walked in, took his seat, and immediately took a telephone call from Bali and was giving relationship advice to a woman for 20 minutes. That's how interested he was in the game.
Yes, rugby league's a great thing sometimes.
It really the game didn't really hold people's attention. The funny thing about that story is the concept of my friend Peter giving relationship advice to anyone.
Anyone who knows Peter will know that's funny, right?
But people walked into ANZ and they were looking to do anything but watch what was on offer there last night.
Are you blaming the venue or are you blaming the game?
I'm blaming Jared Hayne.
Right. Or the lack of.
Well, that was what got me through the turnstiles. Right. And how disappointed was I to hear that the plane had been grounded on the Gold Coast.
And are you surprised?
No.
No. Now, how are you apart from that, Chris?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well, thank you, Stephen. How are you, Stephen?
Well, Chris, thank goodness you asked. Last week I ran the City to Surf 1 year older, 1 minute faster.
That's really good. That's like, you know, sort of you can shoot your age with golf as a handicap. So
now you just mentioned that golden word age, and, you know, we're not spring chickens anymore, Chris. And a man who has more wisdom than us put together in our little pinky, Ian Heads, is with us this morning. Good morning, Ian. How are you doing?
Morning, Stephen. Chris, lovely to be here. Thanks, it's an honour, in fact.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Now, Ian,
the honour is all ours.
It is all ours. So I want to put it to you. Is purely rugby league a young man's game? Is there any scope for anybody over a certain age to play rugby league?
Well, I think it used to have gaps in it where older players could, do something. I remember one of the Kangaroo Tours, 1978, perhaps, where Neil Fox, who was 44, I think, played for Bradford against...
Chock's just a babe then.
played for Bradford against the Australians. And scored two great tries in the first half. Cut him up with his skills and things, you know, and then he faded out of the match. But
right.
Anyway, that's a lot of years ago.
Would that be the oldest person ever to play rugby league at that level?
I wouldn't be far off it. I did see a halfback from on that might have even been on that tour. There was a halfback from an African-born halfback who did the same thing to Australia, just with skills.
Right.
Chopped them, opened them up unbelievably, and then he played on one leg, they tell me afterwards.
I was at Jubilee last week, and I swear to God, they were trying to hold Billy Smith back in his special members bar. He was raring to get on that field and have a crack.
Yeah,
those
Billy
silky
would.
Skills.
he'd be able to carve up the Titans.
Absolutely.
Is it Billy Wilson is the oldest in Australia?
Yeah, I think Billy was a great survivor. He went into his early 40s, I think. There's always a bit of doubt about just how old he was, but Captain Blood, my offsider at the Telegraph, George Crawford, christened him many years ago. Right.
Now, just to give people some context here, you, for many, many years you've been writing for the Telegraphs, Sundays. Put it in context, I do remember when there was a morning paper and an afternoon paper.
Well, two afternoon papers.
Two afternoon papers.
And three morning papers.
Three morning papers. Wow. Can you imagine, Chris?
Nirvana, Stephen. Nirvana. I pine for those
You'd
days.
You'd never finish your coffee in the morning, would you?
That's right.
And you've written for not all of them, but most of them?
Oh, I guess I have over the years. Yeah, yeah. I started in the early 60s, so I've sort of worked my way through them.
Through them all, yeah.
I've probably have written for them all on and off. I did start with the Telegraph, you know, and then I left them.
Under too. Frank Packer, or?
Yes, it was, in fact.
Okay, yeah. Was he a hard man?
Yeah, he was, but I think he was a fair bloke. He looked after
hard
his stuff.
Hard fair, yeah. That sounds like a rugby league.
Yeah, it does, actually. Yeah,
Kerry the same, I'm assuming. And rugby league week, of course.
Well, Kerry was a league tragic. That was the difference between him and his father, I think.
Frank wasn't.
Well, I'm not as aware. He's more interested in the horses. He was a big racing man, you know.
Right, yeah.
But Kerry loved his footy. He used to come out to the sports ground particularly. You can still see him climbing over the seats to get up into the press box.
For the kids listening, the sports ground is now Allianz.
Allianz, yes.
Same space, yes.
Same.
The agricultural showground is just the showground. Spudge?
Yeah.
Cricket ground is the cricket ground. That hasn't changed.
Yeah, they haven't changed. Well, they've changed, haven't they, with the new stands and things.
But, no, Hill. But I miss the Hill. Do you miss the Hill, Ian?
I do, yeah. Just a very quick story, and I won't take you away from your themes.
We're here.
But my first experience of going to the football was in 1950. Two uncles of mine took me to the Test match, Australia-Great Britain. And I stood just beneath the scoreboard, a dreadful muddy day, mud about three or four inches deep, and they slogged up and down the field. I don't remember much of it. I was 7 years of age.
No.
But anyway, Australia's Ron Roberts scored a very famous try, which was Rugby League Week later rated the greatest moment in Australian Rugby League history, and everyone threw their hats in the air. I didn't have a hat, so I didn't throw. but it was a great day. So I've got a great memory of the Sydney Cricket Ground. Yeah, wonderful place.
I do remember hats too on the Hill, but I also remember bottles.
Yeah, bottles.
They used to drink beer out of bottles.
Beer out of bottles.
And occasionally the bottles would be missiles.
Well, they did that, but on this particular wet day, the ground was so... there was a huge crowd there, you know.
Yeah.
But the ground was so soft that the smart blokes drank their beer in these rather large bottles and then pushed
the
nose into the ground and stood on them.
Stood on them.
So they had a good view of the action.
Innovation.
Mate, that's the Aussie spirit,
isn't it? That is the Aussie spirit, at large. I mean, we're soft with these moulded seats and they're going to put Wi-Fi into them. Who needs Wi-Fi? Yeah. Bring back three morning papers and two afternoon papers and then we're talking.
Can I give credit here while it's due, because we may get HG back on soon, but the Sporting Probe is the best thing on radio at the moment by a long way.
It sure is.
And they talk about this sort of upgrading of stadiums to a world standard, you know, and they're talking about having a fromagerie and a shopping mall and a glass oval.
Fromagerie. They're having a national conversation about it.
Stephen. National conversation.
I love how they keep reaching out to our sports minister, Greg, without success.
Yes. So we implore you to turn off here and go to their podcast right now.
Absolutely.
Now, look, I did bring up age for a reason. Announced this week, or could be a bit of scuttlebutt in the media. Boxer Anthony Mundine's secret meeting with St George Illawarra boss Peter Dowse about NRL return at the age of 42. Has age wearied him, Chris, do you think?
Not at all. I think he's put a circle around the Koori Knockout Tournament, which coincides with the grand final week. He wants to see where he's at. He's acknowledged that he'll need to put on a little bit of bulk.
Bit of pud.
Because, you know, he's sort of stripped down.
He's down at 80,
style.
Wasn't he?
I think it was about 65 kilos. 65. I think it was something like that. And let's face it, Anthony, who played the game first, I think, in 1993, the prototypical rugby league players changed a little bit physically. Mm. So age is one thing, but physicality and bulk will be another issue.
Dare I say, on a serious issue, that the indigenous players play with a different physique. I mean, you look at some of those boys from Tinga, you know, they didn't need to be big. They had the skills and they were tough. I mean, look at Jonathan Thurston. He's tough. He's not a big man.
No.
So maybe Chock at 42 could come back. Older than Gal by about 6 years, I think. And
well, that is old.
That is old. Luke Lewis, how old is he? He's our man time himself,
isn't
he?
I think he's slightly.
Is that all?
He's got years to go. Plenty left in the tank.
Okay, it says here, North Sydney Bears star Billy Wilson, Ian, was the oldest player in history at 40 years of age and 57. But we now know there were older ones.
Yeah, but NRL style, you know, NRL Australian style. Version.
Yeah. Yeah, they might have been in the early days, some of those old rugby players came into the game. They'd been in the game a long time playing rugby and then played a little bit of rugby league. There were a few oldies around there.
It does sound funny when you say the last time he played was 17 years ago.
And then Badger, of course, Gavin Badger, is threatening to go to 50 as a referee. So I think we're rethinking what the parameters are, Stephen.
I mean,
that's important.
Yeah, okay. So the Masters competition, we could have just an old people's competition, couldn't we?
That'd be true.
Why doesn't rugby league look after their elderly better than what they are?
There hasn't been the long-term planning that's clearly needed, because And this is my own personal theory, Stephen.
Yes.
We're an ageing population.
Oh, no. The baby boomers are ageing and they're catching up on us.
The evidence is overwhelming.
Yeah. I'm living proof of it. I'm
telling you. Ian, you're not the only one. Now, I tell you what, are they the Roosters? Villains or visionary? I put it to you, Chris and Ian. They're eyeing off, and they've already done laid the groundwork, so to speak, to take over the bowling club in Birrell Avenue in Bondi, top of Bondi there.
Waverley Bowling Club?
Yes. Now, you may say, well, what are they doing? Why do they get involved? Well, you know, they came across as the loving sort of bigger uncle and said, look, you guys are in trouble. And Bondi, as we know, are sort of a resort for the elderly to sort of have some exercise and fresh air and sunshine and a bit of social companionship, cup of tea, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe a little nip of whiskey in the tea, you know, that sort of caper. The Roosters come along and say,
that sounds like your Saturday afternoon.
It sounds like everybody's sat up here now with Petersham Bolo and Marrickville Bolo hosting music and barefoot bowls and families and barbecues.
But there's just so many hipsters that you can attract to that sort of caper, Stephen. It's not going to turn your financial model around, is it?
And not in Bondi.
Not in Bondi.
Not in Bondi. Not in Bondi. No,
there are no hipsters in Bondi. That's the trouble.
Exactly, yeah. Only fake hipsters, right? So, what did they do? Many, many years ago, they stepped in and said, look, we're going to help you guys. You're in debt.
We're the Roosters.
The Roosters, the Roosters. What about we take over? We won't use that word takeover. We'll take over your club and we'll install some new facilities and make it sparkling and brand new, and we'll give you a good promise of 20 years at least of good activity for the elderly in the area. Fantastic. You know, the 450 members of the Bolo against the 41,000 members of the Chooks thought it was a great deal. Until suddenly this week, there's been a move afoot to actually say, look, why don't we just move you out and we'll put in a building for aged care facilities for the area. Now, they promised. Now, apparently, the bowling club, of course, have been around since 1893. So they had first dibs at this space, right?
Right.
But they're in a bit of debt. They reckon they're clawing back their way from the debt. And there was a chap that runs the footy club, the CEO or the CEO, the operating executive there, says, look, we're going to shift you over to the North Bondi Golf Club and you can have a little space there. Even though it's public land, we don't have a deal there past 2018.
This is the guy who said that we're going to install a state-of-the-art golf and bowls facility at North Bondi, right?
That's right.
Isn't it like a mini putt-putt course up on the hill there with the stink pot? It's like a 9-hole par 3. How's that state-of-the-art?
Windblown, stony ground.
I think that the Roosters might have been selling a little bit of a line here to the poor Waverley members.
This is Scott Bennett's chap from the Roosters. Now, villain or visionary, I say to you, Chris, one more time. Is this the future that perhaps rugby league teams could brand their own retirement villages, their own sunset villages, and put in ex-players? Look, you know, you could put in the referees if you want, you know, touchies. Look,
journos, old sports writers, perhaps.
Sports writers as well. We've got to go somewhere, right?
Certainly.
Absolutely. And I'd rather go to a St. George retirement village. You'd rather go to a Balmain one. What about you, Ian? Where would you like to go?
Well, I grew up with they weren't the Roosters, they were the Tricolours, so there's a bit of a difference there.
Tricolours, yes.
Tony Paskins and those people you've never heard of. But
they were good guys then.
They were, yes.
But then what
they
about...
They all lived up around that way, funnily enough. Or some of the footballers, around Waverley.
Right.
I lived around there myself for quite a while, so it was a big part of...
Scott came out and said, look, what we're doing is we're trying to manage our elderly footy states people, you know, the ladies as well as the men. We're trying to give them a place to, you know, not just play bowls, but to see out their years.
Look, I think this is a great idea. I mean, for example, the Roosters one could be like the city of Quebec. So it'd be the Roosters / Tricolour. So it'd have a French theme.
Oh, okay.
You know, you'd have the Four Horsemen entertainment room. You know, remember the great, you know, Puig Aubert and the great French players of the 50s.
Do we get croissants in the morning?
You would think so. Yes. You have the blue the lingerie Baguettes? And the fromagerie, just like the state-of-the-art stadium.
Okay, now we're talking.
I mean,
Café au lait?
I mean, Ian, you could do afternoon readings of some 40 books you've written on sport. I mean,
be happy to.
That'd be tremendous there. I mean, I love the idea, Stephen, of you perched on a hill overlooking Cogra, or UL Jubilee, as it's now called.
You're saying we could wipe out some of those grounds that aren't being used that often, like Cogra, like Jubilee Oval, turn into a nursing home.
Exactly.
Right? Okay. Look, maybe Mike Bent had an idea with these greyhound spaces. Maybe they're useless and turn them into old age homes. What do you think?
And you know, and again, one of the great concerns about rugby league that they are addressing, and, you know, hello, Mr. Greenberg, and all the best to you and your family. We wish you all the best.
Your kids and your grandkids.
Terrific. is careers after football.
Yeah.
Now, here is a growth industry because, as we say, people are aging.
We're aging, the population is aging.
You have rugby league themed nursing homes populated and staffed by ex-rugby league players.
Right.
So, you know, you can imagine Blocker Roach on the piano at the Balmain doing a sing-along.
What would he be banging out?
Let me tell you, I can find a
roll
bit of...
Roll out the No, that's the wrong song.
He goes, give me 1989 all over again. And let me tell you, there's a little bit of real estate where they could possibly build that facility in the Rozelle area right now that springs to mind.
Callan Park.
You're forgetting about the Balmain Leagues.
Of course.
AKA the Meth Lab.
Yeah, right. The art gallery.
and Benny Elias would be still involved in the project as he'd be the greeter at the door. Good morning, how's your day?
Yeah,
all that sort of thing.
Little bowl of cap.
Yeah, Junior Pierce, of course, would be involved in the musical entertainment with his hilarious...
He tap dances.
...band, his Midnight Oil cover.
That's right. Versions,
I mean... Is the NRL listening? Do you think that the NRL's listening to this issue?
I hope so. These are terrific ideas, you know.
That's how we see
it. They've got to be listening.
Now, I tell you what, I could be wrong about Scott at the Chooks.
You could, but you're probably not.
I think there's a sort of there's a whiff in the air of opportunism and perhaps money. You know, I could be wrong here.
I think cash.
I don't think it's visionary.
I think cash in brown paper bags, but that's probably wrong.
Yes, that's probably wrong. It is. But dare I say, the South Sydney, God love them. They've got a true vision, haven't they, Chris? They've come up with this idea. I don't know where they're going to put this, but they want to have baby races. Now, greyhound races have been slammed, hammered out of the game. But some sort of entertainment, maybe halftime entertainment, or maybe back at the sheds, I don't know where, but baby racing.
Okay, so I had a vision just there of the South Sydney Retirement Home, and you'd have to build the rooms a little extra width, because where are you going to put the Burgeye? I mean, imagine what a room for the Burgess twins, how big that would have to be.
And imagine the four Burgeye have kids. How big is that?
the chicken budget, the catering budget alone, but the baby race...
Have you read about this?
I have read about this.
Yeah, the idea is, I'm assuming they're in nappies just for speed, you know, less resistance, right? And I'm assuming they've got some sort of goal, like when you put turtles or you know, snails in a race, you know, they've got to get to something, so you've got to have something at the end, maybe their mother, I don't know.
Well, look, let's face it, 6,826 people last night proved that you've got to come up with interesting ways to get people to ANZ Stadium, right? So what they're offering is a night out in one of the corporate suites for the Rabbitohs, for any parents who are prepared to have their baby participate in this race.
Right, okay.
Right. Now, the details are a little sketchy
yes.
But I think what they'll do at halftime is they'll sort of very quickly erect a sort of an oval shape in the middle of the park, and the babies will be in their little crib pens, and then you'll hear the bell.
A bell, yeah.
And then along will come a mechanical rabbit, because let's face
and
it,
the latch goes up,
and the babies are off after the rabbit. And you can get a bet on.
Right.
You know, you'll be able to bet on it.
And the babies are painted the colours of their team. I'm assuming some of the parents might not all have allegiance to the one South Sydney team.
Well, it's the Warriors, so I think there'll be a few Kiwis.
Yes.
And let me tell you, Shane Richardson's a genius, because talent identification in rugby league
has to start early. Yeah.
And don't you tell me that the baby that's first over the line isn't offered a contract.
Yeah. So there's Shane with his iPad, right? Marking the number 17, you know, earmarking for signing up next week, right? Now, what sort of inducements will get the babies moving? What I mean, like in greyhounds, they've got a rabbit that flies past. What would you have?
Yeah, well,
lollipop or a...
You know,
a unicorn or something?
Look, I'm going back to... Do they still have those baby food tins? You know, I remember as a child loving...
You're looking at Ian like he'd know.
I don't know, the grandkids, I don't know what the situation is, but, you know, it was like the apricot mash or whatever. If you put some big cans of baby food at the finish line...
Yes.
I think, as a grandfather of four small... granddaughters.
Of course, you do some work now.
Who I'd be quite happy to enter into the spirit of this. But they do like those these things with the jangly things.
Yeah, a mobile situation.
They like a bit of noise. You know?
That's coming past. All the ears prick up. The little babies go up. The gate goes out. Out they come.
You put a big Fisher Price logo up there in neon.
Yes,
that'll get a
sponsorship. Now I'm hoping, unlike the greyhound industry, that those that aren't fast enough aren't put down, Chris. I'm hoping that's not part of this visionary plan from South Sydney.
It would be a very, very...
Unfortunate.
It would be a very, very revolutionary way of addressing our population crisis.
Overpopulation.
It is a little bit Logan's Run. I mean, at least in Logan's Run, they got to 30. Yes. I mean, it's a little harsh.
It is a little harsh.
But
we don't know. We haven't gone that far yet. We
certainly hope not. I mean,
we combine the Sunset Homes with the baby racing?
Well, man.
Can we put the two together?
This is radical stuff now.
It is, isn't it? You know, and it'll give the grandparents something to do as they're aging.
Yeah.
The parents need to work. Kiddies something to do, right?
It's a great way for the Grant, I mean,
I'd be happy with that.
You're in the French theme facility, and the kids come over, you know, once a week for a race, and again, you could, you know, run a little market on that, and you know, and it's family, it's quality family time.
And that evil merchant Brian Fletcher.
Well, we don't we've got something to say about him
will
later.
Will he be playing any tunes in the nursing home? Back in a second, fire up. Ian Head's our special guest today. We'll talk about his latest book in just a moment. More stuff coming up.
But here's the thing: after a couple minutes, I was feeling kind of fired up.
Move, baby, move. Get in the groove now. Move, baby, move. Get in the groove, girl. Move, baby, move. Get in the groove now. Let me tell you, girl, you're looking so fine now. But when you twist, you're driving me crazy. You shake, you shake me up, baby. There's only one thing that I wanna do. I wanna move and a groove with you. Yeah, move, baby, move. Get in the groove now. Move, baby, move. Get in the groove now. Move, baby, move. Get in the groove now. Keep it going, girl. You're looking so fine now.
Look, I've got no comment. I mean, he's a player in the team, and we talk and converse and do things as we do all the time. There's been a lot of media about him at the moment. The thing that makes the media go away is his performance for the team and individuals, and that'll take care of things. But
which is exactly what Jarryd Hayne did last night. The media didn't go away because there was no Jarryd Hayne to perform, but they talk.
They converse,
and they do all the other things. Whatever that may be with Jarryd Hayne, I don't know. It's a mystery to me.
You would call Neil Henry, and can I call him the beleaguered Neil Henry at the moment?
The beleaguered, yes. The embattled, yes.
The master of an understatement. In describing Jarryd Hayne, he says he's a player on the team. Now, that's a factually correct statement.
It is factually correct. He's registered and he's on the listings.
Yeah. What's your perspective on the Hayne-Henry situation, and how do you think it's going to resolve?
Well, I've got to say, I've probably been over the Hayne plane for quite a while, I'm not that engrossed in it. I don't think I've struck a player who's attracted the publicity that he did. The machine that went on when he went to America and all it was never ending. So I've moved on to other things. I think,
I think that must have done something to his mind.
Going
to the States and getting so much publicity and having that little taste of success, you know, that on that big stage, how could he possibly come back and fit in? I mean, obviously, he's a troubled man now, isn't he?
So you're sympathetic to the situation?
I am sympathetic to
the
cause.
I was going to say, Ian, if he came with a big advance for you to write the life story, would you reevaluate your interest in the play?
No. Well,
there you go. I love a man of principle.
No. Fair enough. You've how many books on rugby league players have you written? can you name them off the top of your head, Ian Heads?
I know. I certainly can't, Stephen. I've long forgotten.
Who would you like to? No, I won't say that. Who were more work than you thought they'd be?
Most of them have been pretty good. You know, there's so many of them. I've done 40 something. You know, 40
some
books
scandal,
or something.
Here's some scuttlebutt, please, Ian. You know, something a little bit.
I'm trying here, but
I'm looking to Ian's eyes, and I just know there's a whole lot of scandal about Wayne Pearce that you're not prepared to reveal on air, right? You know, he actually ate the skin of the chicken, didn't he?
Well, no. Junior was the genuine clean skin in the sense of looking after himself as well as he did, and the super, you know, fine athlete that he was.
Yes.
So that was quite a pleasure. Now, I've had the pleasure of doing a lot of books and with players, and I've found most of them, there's always a little gaps here and there in stories, you know, sins of omission, you know. Yes. Sometimes you dig deep trying to find out things.
Yeah. Who would you most like to write about that you haven't yet? Is there anybody that you think I can't? That they're just elusive.
I'm stuck on that. There's nobody sticks in my mind. Yeah. I've done
Todd Carney, for example.
Not really.
Not
no,
really.
Think,
no. Okay.
It's a nice offer, but
no. Okay.
Julian O'Neill, perhaps. I mean, Ian, you are involved. You were originally involved through your role in Rugby League Week in the Immortals concept. Am I right in that?
Yeah, I was, Chris. Yeah,
and that's now been acquired by the NRL.
Yes. with and the sad demise of Rugby League Week. Once that went, the immortals have gone too. Yeah.
I have to say, the final issue, I did go cover to cover. I savoured every last word of it, and we really missed
it. And you go back to it.
I've kept it, Stephen.
I think you're also part of, I've got a great big book of the history of Rugby League itself, or the history of the clubs in Rugby League. That'd be fair.
Well, I've done a couple of those. I did True Blue, which was the whole history, and then David Middleton and I did a book on the centenary book, actually, telling the whole story of the game.
Okay.
So I've enjoyed it. I've got a lot of stuff in my head, as you can imagine. Too much rugby league, really. I'm trying to just sweep a bit out of
We're trying to unpack some of it. With the Immortals concept coming back, my understanding is that they're going to try and resolve there is perhaps an underappreciated Rugby League Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And then there's the Immortals, and there'll be, you know, the evaluation process for that. But we're wondering whether we could encourage you to be a founding member of the Hall of Shame for Rugby League, because we spent a lot of time uncovering the great achievements.
And I think you'd agree, Ian, that most of the fans do love, some of the what we would call the soap opera of Rugby League.
Absolutely.
And Toddy Greenberg's backed us up on that, hasn't
he? He's pretty keen on the idea, and I think your wisdom would
celebrate
help.
Celebrate the misses, not just the hits.
That's right. Yeah. And I mean, for one, I'd certainly been... one of the first members for me would have to be John Elias, because I think he's got a particularly proud track record in this area.
I suppose my overall view of it would be that it would be a bloody big hall.
If you go down to Driver Avenue and you go in, there's the museum there, but you've down the back there, you've got this really bloody great big Hall of Shame. I mean, it'd be interesting to see how popular, which one would you know, where would the kiddies go and put their dollar, you know?
Well, this is it. There's some bizarre concept that Barry Jekyll and that crowd have come up with, which is a light rail into some station and a car park.
Okay.
Get rid of all that.
Well, no, maybe we could put the Hall of Shame down near where the actual station is.
How good would that be?
Near the tennis courts.
What
do you think?
As the light rail comes in and there are sort of...
Ladies and gentlemen, step off to the Hall of Shame Rugby League. Only $2 to get in. And that'll be rolling up there, wouldn't they? That'd pay for it.
Yeah, with the change in technology, there'd be holograms, because you'd be adding players constantly.
Well, we don't have any footage of Toddy in the bathroom.
We've got some imagery.
No. Still picture.
You can render that and then bring it to life.
Bring it to life, okay. Yeah.
You know, I mean, Nate Miles.
Yeah, yeah.
Freddie Fittler outside the police
at the casino,
station.
You know. It just goes on and on. It'd be incredibly entertaining, wouldn't it?
Hopper would be an entire wing in himself. I was there the day he played North Queensland Cowboys out at Campbelltown. I think I was there, and he got 11 separate charges on the day, which I think still stands as the record in one particular game.
Now, I imagine you'd have to bring the lawyers into this.
Well,
it's
got to be done sensitively.
Yeah, sensitively.
Hopper Wadi reminds me of a very funny moment in rugby league, actually, when that matter was taking place, the digital situation.
Yeah, era.
It was a launch of a book that was being done by, it was a Jack Gibson book, actually, and John Peard was launching it. I don't know if you've heard the story, but it was a genuinely funny, witty moment in rugby league where Peardy now struggles, and I hope, if you're listening, John,
great bloke,
and great for rugby league, John Peard. But Peardy had trouble getting onto the stage to get to the microphone. Mm-hmm. So eventually, I think David Morrow was there and helped him up. But Peardy's opening line is ad lib, terrific ad lib. He said, "Where's John Hopawadi when you need him?" He needed a bit of help to get up.
Hasn't the word digital been a very vexed issue in rugby league, where Hopawadi, or the so-called digital future, 180 million in the Ford estimates, and we know where it's ending up. It's ending up in the pockets of the NRL executives.
Yes.
I don't understand digital in any sense of it.
Now, you mentioned Jack Gibson. Where is his jacket? Is that
Kangaroo jacket.
Is that in the museum?
Not as far as I know, it should be. I presume it's with the family still.
See, we all talk about that stuff, don't we?
Yeah, that's true.
Russell Fairfax's hair, all that stuff.
There's Russell Fairfax and then Schubert's hairdresser. I mean, that man or woman contributed to the 1970s image of rugby league in ways that resonate throughout the ages. Every time they go retro, they talk mullet.
Yes.
You know, there's work to be done here, I think, is what we're saying. And I'm saying that you're on board with us on this.
Well, I could at least be a senior advisor.
There you go.
Just to get the facts right. Yes.
I do know a bit of stuff from tours and things, So.
That's where the bodies are buried.
So I guess if we're speaking of things that cause issues in rugby league, you have to look at the Hayne Henry situation as the latest chapter in a bit of a pattern.
Well, for those that don't know, Jarryd Hayne, first of all, he's the great code hopper. How many codes, Chris?
Let me see. I've got league, I've got NFL, got union.
Yes.
I think there was, at some stage, some faltering initial attempts to be a jockey.
Yeah.
That was sort of kept
Well, he signed up for
he signed up for Waverley, then was only disappointed to hear that it's being torn down.
Now, is it, we don't need digital tracking to follow Jared Haynes' path here, do we?
No, the media does a good job.
He's left a trail of... a trail, hasn't he, Chris?
Digital footprint.
And an actual footprint of failure. Everywhere he's gone of sorts. I mean, he's got some scouts for himself, but there's a list of coaches that have fallen by the wayside over the years. Some of them have escaped and gone on to better things, but can you name a few of them?
I think I can name most of them, yes. Stephen. I mean, obviously the focus here is on Parramatta, and it seems to be... It's something about Haynes' interaction with the coaches that plays out over a two-year time frame.
Take me back to 2006.
Okay, so I think his first coach back then, who would that have been?
Brian Smith.
Yes, yes. Yeah, the great fan of Jimmy Webb, by the way, you know, in these recent losses.
Great fan of the whiteboard and Jimmy Webb.
Yeah, and then Brian Smith within 2 years was replaced in an interim sense by Jason Taylor.
Right. And look how good he's done.
Yeah, he's done absolutely magnificently. Yeah. Talking about coming full circle, coaching against the Tigers. Yeah. Thank you very much, Jason Taylor.
So two coaches, one club.
That's right.
Right.
I think we then went to Michael Hagan.
2008.
Who's now, let's face it...
Where is he?
He's in the modern version of Purgatory. He's coaching with Mal Meninga.
Right.
You know, coaching for Mal.
Yeah.
I think we then moved on to...
Daniel Anderson. Yes, okay.
Things went really well for him as far as Parramatta's concerned.
Yes.
Stephen Kearney, absolutely kicking goals with the Warriors.
Now, he's gone to some Siberia, right?
That's right. And then, of course, the doyen of coaches took it on. I mean, it needed a stronger man, someone who could stand up to Jared.
Yeah.
Put him in his place.
Exactly.
Take Parramatta to the wooden spoon, Ricky Stewart.
So we blame both them. Both are responsible, are they?
Brad Arthur comes in on an interim basis, Jared decides to go to the NFL.
Ah.
So he's not there for the 2 years,
as we like to refer to it,
the incubation period.
Okay. So he's off to America. He's off to follow his dream, one of many.
Yeah.
And then I think the man there was... Who was the coach over there?
Well, Jim Tomsula. I don't know much of the Jim story.
Oh, I don't really know.
He's a loose cannon, I think, from all reports. And everything happens quicker in America. It's bigger, it's bolder, it's brighter.
Yep.
Jared blazed like a comet for about 11 minutes of on-field time for the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
Jim Sontula at the end of the season, sacked.
Blazed out. Yeah. Yes. Okay. And then the Fijian excursion, where some dude that coached Fiji, Ben Ryan, I think.
Ben Ryan. Yeah.
What happened to Ben?
Well, again, he wasn't exposed to Jared...
For particularly long.
Yeah. He's not coaching the Fiji Sevens anymore.
No.
He's a gibbering idiot, isn't he? Well, he's in a facility somewhere.
He's just wandering around the islands.
They put him in quarantine in Fiji as a result of the exposure to Jared.
Wow.
Mm.
So what is this, like some sort of science fiction film you're talking about? The actual... We used to call him the Hain plane, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now, what do you call him now?
Well, as Neil Henry stares into the abyss of a future
Neil
involving...
Neil Henry, of course, yes.
No longer... Do you think Henry will go, Ian? Do you think that's the strong arm?
Looks very shaky, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well, Henry's on about 400,000 odd. One point two million
per year.
Who's going to be cheaper to let go?
Well, it's going to be a lot of bloodletting either way.
Oh dear! Don't Parramatta either. I mean,
but it is like a science fiction story. Yeah. I think it's something that will in the future be known as the coach killing virus,
right?
AKA the Haynes strain.
The Haynes strain.
Yeah.
Like the Andromeda strain.
Like the Andromeda strain.
Wherever it goes, it infects everything around it.
That's right.
A trail of destruction and gibbering idiots.
It might lead us into discussion time. We're going to talk about War for Planet of the Apes sometimes, Stephen. And Woody Harrelson channeling Colonel Kurtz.
Yeah, that's right. Now, did you know, Chris, that Sydney has dropped out of the Domain Top 10 livable cities, and the main reason is terrorism fears in this city?
Okay.
I didn't know that.
Okay.
And a man who's tapped into that is the head of the trustees at the Moore Park district there, who is a little concerned about the state of affairs at Allianz, once upon a known as a sports ground, amongst other things, that he fears that if there was a terrorist, or dare we say, an alien invasion, and people had to evacuate quickly, that Allianz wouldn't be up to standard for the procedure that was required.
Okay, well, first of all, don't say it won't happen. I've seen Independence Day and the sequel.
And it does happen.
Yeah, so it does happen.
And people flee madly.
It's mass panic.
Mass panic. You get 30 or 40,000 people, they panic, they run, right? Yeah.
Anyone who's seen Cloverfield, it's the human cost that's often misunderstood.
Right.
Speaking of Allianz, can you take us back to the sports ground? Ian, what was the dimensions? What was the capacity? How did it look?
Well, it was a lovely ground to watch football, except that it ran east-west.
So the
toss of the coin before a game was always very important.
Who designed that? Did he put up his hand?
Well, Leichhardt Oval was the same, of course. It was a, it was used to run the same direction.
Yeah, we had to change change
the direction. Swing, yeah. So I don't know who was responsible, but he's got a...
He's gone quietly out.
Yeah, he has. Yeah.
And how many people would it help?
You know, 30,000 or so.
Right.
Pretty uncomfortably, I would say.
Yeah. But,
it was an old-fashioned ground, but you were close to the action. Right. It was good.
It was beautiful. Now we've got Allianz, this brutal Phillips Cox legacy.
I like Allianz.
Do you now?
I do. Yeah. I think it's a nice place to watch a game of footy.
Well, it's very unsafe, Stephen. Have you read the data?
Well, yes. Yeah, so what does the data say, Chris? Have you got the data in front of you here? I've got the data somewhere here, and I think it says here, building assessment ignites fears. Allianz Stadium is a death trap. In event of emergency, a potential death trap, it says here. Confidential building assessments say it would be ill-equipped to cope with a serious emergency. They're hoping the expected billion-dollar rebuild and the funds that's going to the Stadia Australia will be, some of it will be channeled in because of this death trap and this possible alien invasion or terrorism that could really incite the crowd to go nuts, Chris, you know, and you've got to have some sort of, you know, backup.
You've got to have a plan, Steve. You've got to have a plan.
The leaked letter, it says here. It was sort of sitting outside for the journos when they call the meeting, right? There were no fire sprinklers. Did you know that? No emergency power supply. Not enough exits. Non-compliant crowd barriers and woefully insufficient toilets.
Yeah, well, I can vouch for that.
What they haven't mentioned is how poor the food is there.
Well, that's right. Can't feed them.
No, yeah. Now, first of all, you can't feed them. You can't water them. You can't ablute.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't evacuate them.
Mm-hmm.
Trouble.
But you know why? You know why nothing's been done about this?
No, why?
Because when the politicians were taken down, as politicians are wont to do, and they need to see these things for themselves, and they're going, well, this sounds bad. You can't ablute them, you can't feed them, you can't evacuate them.
Yes.
This could be a crisis waiting to happen. This is going to look bad for their government.
Yeah.
So they went down to look at the scene for themselves.
Yeah.
They happened to be at a Sydney Roosters game, and they said,
there's nobody here.
There's nobody to evacuate.
Yeah, what's the problem?
Said, move on.
But they said, gee, that's a big screen you've
that's
got.
A very
jumbo screen's a beauty.
It's
don't get rid of that.
The resolution's incredible. How do I get one of those how do we get one of those in our Macquarie Street offices?
Yes, exactly. And it says here that, this is a very sad fact, there's only 48 women's toilets, well short of the 335 required. That's a very sad indictment now. And so they're asking for, well, a good many millions of dollars, please. To fix it up. I think that's a fair call.
You know, and you know what they want to turn it into?
What do they want to turn it into?
A boutique stadium.
You're on Fire Up. We're about to talk about Ian Heads and his book, his great book, one of many, over 40. About
the great grand final heist.
Great. On Fire Up in just a moment.
Fired up! Ready to go! Fired up! Ready to go! Fired up! Ready to go! Let's go change the world. Thank you, everybody. All right, who wants ice cream? Come get it.
South Sydney's marching girls add to the colourful atmosphere. And there's an enthusiastic welcome for the official mascots, the largest rabbits ever to stride the Sydney cricket ground. Sparkling in club colours, Balmain's marching girls hail the Tigers mascot in his initial appearance at the SCG. Winning the toss, Balmain runs with the wind. Sims kicks off deep into Balmain's territory where Smithies gathers. Endeavouring to clear the Tigers' half, Smithies kicks through an opening, but showing keen positional sense, Sims gives Coote a chance to burst down the middle until Peter Bolton and Walsh close on him. With the fourth tackle coming up, Williams sends to Proven, on to Alton, who's hemmed in. Calling for the ball, Proven positions Parker. On to the flying Williams, who dives over for the only try of the match. Leading 11-2, Balmain are confident now as Souths need two converted tries to overcome the deficit. And they battle to the finish, but the final hooter brings an end to their hopes, and Balmain its first premiership in 22 years. One of Rugby League's foundation clubs, Balmain takes their 11th title, their first being gained back in 1915.
Chris Gale, talk about overcoming deficits. The four tackle rule, the deficit that St George could never overcome in 1969, finally led to your first premiership, yours being, of course, Balmain Tigers premiership. In 1969, Ian Heads has written a book about it.
He has, Stephen. And I just want to give a shout out to our producer, Pat Mulhern, who assembled that audio. That's actually him recreating the Rockman's
video.
That's his
voice.
He's done an absolutely magnificent job. Look, Ian's here. He's the author of The Great Grand Final Heist, a mysterious tale of Tigers, Rabbitohs and an unlikely coaching hero. My personal view, having read the book, is it should be a prescribed HSC text for New South Wales students going
forward. Not just those in the inner city of Sydney.
Yeah. And of course, 1969, Time magazine did what were the 10 most significant events of the year?
Man landing on the moon.
Was number two.
Number two!
And number one was Balmain winning the 1969 Grand Final 11 points to two.
Stuff.
Yeah. We all like to start with personal stories. I mean, I know where I was on the day. I was at Jocelyn Edmonds' 8th birthday party. Mm. It was a hat party. Mm. And I went as Neil Armstrong, cognizant of the recent walking on the moon.
Not as Tony the Tiger, or whatever he was then.
Ian, where were you?
Matter of fact, I was at the Sydney Cricket Ground watching Balmain win the premiership.
What area were you sitting in, Ian?
I sat in the top deck of the members' stand in what was laughingly called the press area, really.
There
was very little room.
Yes.
On ordinary days it was okay, but on grand final day everyone wanted to go, so we were squeezed into several layers of seats up the back.
All
of the
enjoying the largesse of Frank Packer, I assume, you know, the champagne and the caviar, etc., that Frank would lay on for these sort of occasions.
That could have been there, but I probably missed it. I might have been dictating copy or something at half-time.
Meat pies and water then, okay.
Yeah.
And if I could say, I suppose the initial reaction of someone is, how could you write an entire book on one game? And I go, well, that's an easy answer. Of course you could.
Yes.
But if you actually go through the book, there's actually one chapter on the actual game itself, and it's a context of how these two clubs came together, the sort of the pathway that led them there, the immediate legacy and outcome straight afterwards, and then the enduring legacy for the two clubs and their franchises and the players themselves. And then along the way, so many side stories of characters who didn't play, like Dennis Tutty, who might be the most important person in modern football.
Yeah.
But you really begin with a story that needs to be told. Now, people ask me, why do I hate the Rabbits?
Yes.
And I say, 1909, I felt like I was there. Can you talk us through that story? And am I right? You asked the question, did South Sydney dud Balmain in 1909? I'd like to answer
and
the question
and
say yes, but what do you...
The residual bitterness and anger as held by West Tigers fans or Tigers fans.
Never let it go.
Fans.
Can you talk us through that story?
Well, it's... I mean, in recent times there's been, you know, there's a lot of talk about feuds in the game and this team hates that team and that sort of thing, but there was genuine ill feeling between those two clubs caused by this event in 1909, which was effectively the belief of South Sydney, the belief of the Balmain blokes that they'd reached an agreement with South Sydney not to play a match, which was to be a prelude to the Kangaroos versus Wallabies game, which hinged the future of rugby league, basically. the sponsors of that game needed to get a gate to get enough money to keep rugby league going. So that match was important. But Balmain and South both took umbrage at having to play as a preliminary game.
Ian, before you go any further, these are stories that obviously were handed down.
Yeah, very much so.
You didn't talk to anybody that actually had played there or had been there?
No, it was extremely well recorded at the time. Yeah, there's a lot of research done on it. But it certainly happened. But the question of whether South did Balmain boycotted the game, South and the players turned up at the gate and tried and dissuade the spectators from going in.
And they both agreed to this.
Well, that's the $64 question.
Right.
Souths have claimed that there was never a firm agreement, and Souths ran on and kicked off against no one.
Where were the Balmain players?
At the gate.
Telling
the punters not to go in.
Protesting.
Yeah. That's right.
Solidarity. Working class game.
Yeah, come stand up for the workers. The workers.
There's a principle here, and that's it. We hate rugby union.
Meanwhile, the princely South Sydney players kick off to nobody.
Yeah. Kowtowing to the toffs. Scored
a try. Yeah. Scored a try, and that won the premiership.
Why can they play the whole 80 minutes?
Yeah, they really got good for the for and against.
Yeah.
Well, there was no opposition,
they couldn't kick off again.
But then they put together a mixed team from various other clubs. They played a game.
What were the punters thinking? Do you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they went into the match. You know, the Balmain boys, being what they are, may well have threatened the fans at the gate. You
hard
know?
Men, you reckon?
Well, they certainly were. Yeah.
What sort of industries would they have been working in on that day?
Well, the wharves, I think, would be top of the tree. There's a lot of wharf waterside workers.
So the story you write is that they had to go home and wash and have some lunch before they had time to get there. If that was so hard, why couldn't they just walk from the wharves straight to the sports ground and play the bloody game?
Well, it was a matter of time, really. They all worked, so they all had jobs and worked on Saturday mornings.
But my understanding is they finished the jobs at what, 12 or 1?
Well, it's a bit vague, yeah. There was going to be a bit of a rush, you know, to get there.
It's soft, I think. It's soft.
First of all, I'm appalled that you're an apologist for South Sydney. This is such a side of your personality I've never seen before. And secondly, the bigger principle is here. I understand they need money. I understand that. Yeah. But to be a curtain raiser for a rugby union exhibition game.
Well, who organised that, Ian? Who organised the fact that they were the curtain raiser?
Well, the people strapping rugby league together, really.
Strapping rugby league together, I love that.
The Kangaroo Tour had been a failure. The 1908, it was a bold exercise, certainly, but it didn't make any money. So there was very little money.
Yes.
Money left. So it was Gilton and Hoyle, the leaders, and Victor Trump.
So
was
shaky times.
Very shaky times. It was on a bit of a nice edge, strange things happened. So
that would have helped then.
I object, by the way, to this concept that the Balmain guys might have employed standover tactics, because you talk about the difference in street brawls of the time between the Balmain fair go and the Haymarket rules. Can you explain that difference?
Well, yes, I can. In fact, there was a lot of street fighting then. I suppose maybe there is now. Maybe I've just missed out on that as I've got a little older.
There's not enough now.
Not much of it in my life anymore, unfortunately.
It's all retained down there now.
It's all done on video screens.
But the Balmain fair go, which was the one to follow, I suppose. Well, if you're fighting someone and you got knocked down...
Don't go them.
Don't go the slipper.
Nothing happened. Under the Haymarket rules, much tougher grip down there, obviously. If you knocked a bloke down, you then put the slipper in. That was
and this is off the field and on the field.
this is essentially off the field. But I'm sure there's a bit of it on the paddock too.
If you jump forward to the game itself, and it says in the subtitle, an unlikely coaching hero. I mean, the Leo Nosworthy story is a fascinating story, and Leo's still with us, I believe. He's about 90.
He's 90. Yeah.
One thing that really interested me in the description of the season was, he's different to the modern coaches in that coaches generally look for who's their best team and they try and get the same team on the paddock every week.
Yep.
Leo apparently coached in order to get the team that was best suited to the opposition. So can you just talk us through the story about what happened to Paul Cross with the move from the final to the grand final?
This is 1969.
This is 69.
Right. 69, yeah. Right. Yeah, he had a hardness about him, the coach. You know, he was one of the reasons I was keen to do the book. The more I learned about him, the more interested I was in him. He's one of the really fascinating characters, you know, but a quiet man, taciturn sort of a bloke with a bit of a presence about him.
Hard to get him to talk, I imagine.
Not unlike the people in the room. Yes, exactly. I've got to say. But
I'm Haymarket.
Yeah, I'm Balmain Fair Go.
I've forgotten the question.
So about Cross, who scored the late try in the final, and then didn't, and he's Ryan Cross's father, and didn't get a run in the grand final because about moving Rubner.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was one of those tough decisions. Leo said, you know, in the interviews I did with Leo, he said to me, I did some terrible things, you know. And I think he probably rates that as one of them because Cross scored a fabulous try against South Sydney in the on the eastern side. And his trademark was a dive from about 40 metres back, usually. Probably not quite that far, but, you know, it looked like that. And there's a great photo of him, you know, horizontal. Scoring the try, which gave Balmain their chance of beating South. They didn't beat South because Eric Sims kicked a fabulous goal,
Eric Sims.
Yeah.
He's had to change the rule for the field goals. It's like the four tackle rule against the Dragons.
So Balmain then had to go through the final, which they did. They beat Manly. But Cross was subsequently dropped for the grand final, which I think still cuts very deep with him today. I still see him around quite a bit, you know. And that hurts, you know. Yeah. He was part of the team during the year and... But it was just Leo being Leo, you know, and he did it to the good forward, Greg Fryer. Greg Fryer played too. Same thing, you know.
And his theory was he wanted big George Rubin out there who'd been playing in the centres, but he was matched up against Bobby Honan, and he said Bobby might be a bit too quick for George, so put George on the wing and brought Alan Fitzgibbon, who of course is Craig's father, into the team for his defensive capability.
Yeah.
And then George does make an incredible tackle to bundle a South guy into the corner post, which is whether it was a try or a no try that didn't get awarded to South in the grand final. So it was like a master stroke.
Yeah, well, it was. Turned out that way for sure, yeah.
And we're talking about ethics and integrity here, Chris. And we're talking about building a team to defeat another team. Now, South Sydney were the hot favourites that year, correct?
They certainly were. Yeah, they'd won two in a row.
Balmain, no chance. And they employed a tactic. I think it was called the lay down.
Flop down?
Well, I don't call it that, but yeah, that's...
What do you call it?
Well, I call it flop down and lay
flop down. Flop down. And it's, in the modern parlance, it's faking. It's it's like soccer, where somebody pretends to be injured when they're not.
Yeah, well, yes, yeah, essentially that's what it
was. To cut to the chase here.
And it was, it's explained in the book through the words of various of the players, and they all approach it a bit differently, some a bit warily. Leo Nosworthy, I put the question directly to him. Did your blokes lay down? Did you instruct them to lay down? Yeah. And he said, oh, no, not really, but we set out to slow down the game. That was his way of putting it.
Because the convention of the day was if you went down injured, it was the St John's ambulance that would come on the field.
Yeah.
And wherever you were injured, the play would be suspended. And they called them the Zambucks, I think.
The Zambucks, yeah.
And some of the Balmain guys who've been putting in an enormous effort defensively... We're picking up niggles and would, you know, just hit the deck. And
of course they were.
Now, the fact that the defence got a chance to rest is just a happy byproduct. The rules, Stephen. It's in the rules. Rules are different now, but the game's different.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, they didn't break the rules.
I love the way, though, that all fans, including myself, will always defend the integrity of our team against all odds, against all slings and arrows, you know.
As it should be.
As it should be.
Entirely as it should be.
How dare you impugn the reputation of my team, you know.
And just one other question I've got. You talked about a bet that was in the game. And I play basketball with PJ Lane, PJ Isaac, Don's son.
Oh, right.
And you talk about a bet that said if South lost, Don had to perform for an hour at the Balmain Leagues on the grand final celebration night. True story?
Yes.
How great would that have been? Seeing Don, you know, performing for a victorious Roselle crowd.
What sort of look would he have on his face doing that?
Resignation, acceptance.
But he's a trooper.
He's great.
Yeah, he's an entertainer.
And for a full hour, too.
For a full hour, too. No gold watches were smashed.
And Dawn Fraser was up to no good that night?
Fraser would have been all over it.
Yeah.
Certainly on the grand final night, she was blowing a trumpet. She had a trumpet, which she blew on everyone's head. But she was certainly involved the night before when they went and painted tiger paws all over the South Sydney district.
Yeah, what hour of the morning? 1 o'clock in the morning, wasn't it?
We don't know. Yeah, late-ish. Sneaking around.
God, I love her.
There's the iconic photo.
She steals flags. She paints paw prints. What doesn't she do?
She's an every person. Yeah. There's iconic photos in there. The actual when the whistle's blown. I think Len Colleen doing the hand sound, is it?
There is, yeah.
And there's a great photo of Laurie Nicholls celebrating at Balmain Leagues
Club. Now, look, for those that don't like rugby league but love Fire Up, who was Laurie Nicholls very quickly? Sadly passed, but we all remember him.
Yeah, a great character of the
what
game.
What would he wear?
A singlet, basically, yes, but without anything else on top. Black most people have a singlet without something on
no
top.
No shorts, nothing.
No, oh, he does. Oh, no. He's long strides on, yeah.
His sanity was questioned by a lot of people, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, because he His routine was a shadow boxing one,
yes.
You know.
Allowed on the field or the side of the field.
Yeah.
Like a fan, but not like a fan.
And he had the aphorism, so black and gold, never fold.
Yeah.
Andy is handy for Andy Courier. Yeah. Ellery is
and he'd G up the crowd a bit, and he's always shadow boxing. You know, that's what
sound the alarm, here comes Alan McMahon. Wayne Pearce, he's so fierce.
Wow, we miss those characters. Yeah, we'll be back in a moment. Ian Head's journalist of the book, The Great Final Heist, and many, many others. And also, of course, awarded Order of Australia for your contributions to sports media, amongst many other things, and SCG Hall of Media Fame. Is that right?
Well, it is right.
You might have a conflict of interest if we do this Hall of Shame.
If they bring that in, I think, and they bring back knighthoods, certainly in heads is guaranteed.
Certainly.
Feels good.
But you think I'm kinky, right?
You can't take me anywhere. I'll strip down to my underwear if you give me half a chance.
Give me free love out of sight.
I'm gonna turn off every light and hold a private dance. Living room among some special friends. Soon some others dropped around and we all started getting down. And you know how these things end. Mystery love, come back sometime. Mystery love, I'm 69.
Long story short, so apparently I was so nervous, I was shaking in my boots. Mm. Couldn't get my boots on before my debut. Mm. But no, I was fine. And
I just want to say, Gaz, I want to thank you for some of the glorious moments in TV. Now, I don't know if you know, on a Monday, it's one of my favourite things. I call it the fire up segment. And what I like to do, I like to see, I mean, we know about the handshake with Cooper Cronk.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen this. Let's have another look.
Now, I don't know what rock Fletch has been living under, Chris. Has Gaz not told him that we paid Gaz the $5 for the usage of that name back in 2005 that we've been running here from?
Yeah,
fire up the show every week, every year.
It's a call out to Gaz.
Yes.
Is to man up,
man
fire up,
up
and come on this show. As for Fletcher, we've consulted lawyers. I rang Brett Oaten and said, do you know any good lawyers?
Yes.
And he referred us to one.
Yes, good.
And we've slapped an injunction on him in the Supreme Court for the use of our intellectual property.
Yeah, and also he should be jailed for ignorance and stupidity.
I know
his segment's supposed to be funny, but hello.
I think what you'll find is it'll be no surprise to learn that Brian Fletcher is a dual citizen. and he'll say, I didn't know about that either.
Yeah, look, it wouldn't be surprised if he was a code hopper deep down, you know?
Well, he did go from Roosters to South, which is the equivalent.
Enough. That is
because,
enough.
Because if you go to South, you go to a rugby union-loving club.
It's the Great Divide, isn't it?
That's what the 1969 Grand Final heist. Ian Heads has said, I was right about Balmain in 1909, and Balmain deserved the win, and we didn't lie down other than when we needed to.
So we're death-riding Fletch.
Rewriting history. Yeah.
Death-riding Fletch. Right, okay.
Can I do a couple of shout-outs, Stephen, very quickly?
Go for it, please.
First of all, Sarah Lander texted in and said, squeezy pouches is what babies react to now.
Squeezy pouches
of food. Which brings into the question what sort of nutrition her children are receiving as she's feeding them out of squeezy
pouches. And
they'd
have to have experts to check the food allocations in each pouch because somebody could be dropping a little bit of extra sugar and salt and fat and stuff.
That's right. And you know we love a feel-good story, Stephen. We covered Prince Charming Trent Hodkinson on the show.
Another drug story.
Yeah. No, wasn't. No. Not another My Drugs Hell.
Oh, no.
Richie Vaiosa style.
Another fake selling of jumpers story.
No, Gresmule fake. Because let's face it, the thing that's on the nose about that story is this anyone would pay money for Titans jerseys.
Yes.
But we also covered, you know, Teddy Tedesco and the pink boots. But we've got fire up listener David Cutting, who says he's taken his birthday off today, off work, and he's sitting back listening to us with a pre-midday martini, a bowl of green olives, and a Hopewadi wheat cigar. First of all, who tipped him off to what we're actually enjoying here?
Yes.
And just let me relight your cigar there.
Yes.
And he just wants to give us a big shout out. Turns out he's a Roosters fan, so it's not all good news, but he loves it when we give it to the
Melbourne
Storms.
Well, we've got a nursing home coming for him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It'll be up on North Bondi.
Burrell Avenue? State of the... No, Burrell Avenue. That's
Burrell Avenue.
That's where the Suns are home for the tricolours.
And you get bust to the state of the art golf and bowls over on North Bondi, and he'll be reading from the great grand final heist anytime David likes. Happy birthday.
Ian, one last word from you. We've been trying to find a way to stop Melbourne this year. Is there any way in your mind to stop the Melbourne juggernaut?
In the football sense, no.
Barring a midnight call with some Haymarket rules on Cameron Smith.
They're the perfect package, aren't they?
Perfect bloody package.
There's got to be
he's Lucifer, isn't he? He's Beelzebub.
Well,
we
know
he's
sold,
the devil himself.
We know he sold his soul to Queensland, i.e. Mel Meninga, it was the Faust story.
Yeah.
So he sold his soul, but there's got to be an Achilles heel with Melbourne, hasn't there?
Look, a story has come to light, and you were talking about what we're wearing and eating and drinking here. Now, apparently, for those people who don't know rugby league, Craig is the coach of Melbourne, right? And he is probably the most evil man in the world, above Cameron Smith, you would say.
Without doubt.
But every week he has a Wags do.
Is that right?
Just Craig and the Wags.
The wives and girlfriends of the Melbourne Storms players.
Yeah, they come together once a week.
To say thank you for your sacrifice.
There's a spa. And I think it's full of champagne. It's caviar. He comes dressed in a robe.
You ring the doorbell. Yeah. It is in the theme that we're currently hearing from the great Barry White.
Yes.
He opens the door. Shirt undone down to the belly
button. He's got a shirt on, hasn't he?
The bellyache shirt is done down to the belly button.
Right.
Big gold chunky
big
pendant.
Big gold chain, yeah. He's saying across the floor. Right?
And he goes, ladies, I just want to say thank you.
Thank you again.
Thank you again.
Thank you again.
One every week.
And we're talking one man.
One man.
And how many ladies?
Well, and we've got, 25 in the current first grade squad, isn't there?
It's quite a party.
I don't know if we go into the development.
It's quite a party.
It's a party.
Hef style.
He offers champagne and they go, thank you very much. And he goes, well, it's actually the bath. The bath is made of champagne. Hop on in, girls.
And for some reason, this is the magic formula for Melbourne winning each week,
is
it?
This is the secret to their success. If we can just get one camera in there, the whole house of cards will come tumbling down.
Because he does it every week. He's going to do each week.
That's right. Can the West Tigers still qualify? It'll open up the opportunity for us.
Great. Let's bring him down, shall we?
Why not?
Ian, thank you very much for your presence today. We much appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Yeah, it is our thrill. Thank you so much.
So tune in again next week when we invite a veritable breadline of nobodies and wannabes to flesh out another rip-snorting roundup of rugby league shenanigans, slander and smut right here at the home of radio's most fatuous footy confab. Fire!